To order, it's May 7th, about 8 minutes after nine. With me today is my co-chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson, and myself, Senator Stedman. We're going to have four bills today up, so we'll have kind of a fairly busy schedule. I'm going to start with Senate Bill 168, Passenger Vessel Tax Credits. We're going to go on then to Senate Bill 80, Oil and Gas Production Tax Expenditures. Then we're going to go on to Senate Bill 27, Medical Assistance Eligibility. And then Senate Bill 116, Uniform Money Service Act. And we'll continue the meeting with some other work this afternoon, and if we don't finish this morning, we'll have a carryover. But with that, I'm going to start with Senate Bill 168, Passenger Vessel Tax Credit. And we have heard this bill previously. Does any members have any additional questions on this bill? Any concerns? Senator Elton, you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move SB 168 with attached fiscal notes if there are any.
There is. There's a zero fiscal note.
With the zero fiscal note.
We have a motion to move the bill. Your objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move Senate Bill 168 from committee. We'll go on to Senate Bill 80. We'd like to welcome Senator Tom Wagner to the table and his Chief of Staff, Murray Jackson. Today we're going to have this bill introduced. We won't be taking action on it, but what I'd like to do is get it on the table, have Senator Wagner explain the bill, and we can have some testimony and questions. Senator Wagner, if you could please introduce the bill, identify yourself, of course, and then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Tom Wagner. Senate Bill 80 is my bill. I'll have Mary Jackson, my Chief of Staff, go through the bill and talk about all the changes that were made in Senate resources. Then I'll have a statement to read into the record. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Jackson, if you'd go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and go ahead and walk us through. This will be a new issue for some of the members, so just take that into account as you walk through.
Sure. Please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary Jackson. I'm staff to Senator Tom Wagner. This bill was before Senate Resources in the version. Obviously, that's before you as the Senate Resources version. Basically, this bill says that a producer will not be allowed to deduct costs to arrive at the next net tax calculation if those costs were the result of improper or lack of maintenance. If you prohibit improper maintenance in statute, then the departments are allowed to develop the regulations that put that into play. Section one of the bill is the first two and a half pages are the existing statute. It's 4355-165E, and those are all exclusions from lease expenditures. There's 18 of them. This bill adds a number 19, a new subsection, and it shows up on page 3 of the bill on line 19. The lines 19 through 24 set out who is responsible for determining improper maintenance. Initially, the bill was the Commissioner of Revenue in consultation with the Commissioner of DEC and AOGCC. The bill before you now says that it's the Commissioner of Revenue with DNR and the newly formed PSIO, the pipeline, I've forgotten it, Petroleum System Integrity Office. It could get a little easier in acronym, but the PSIO language, we did not put the term PSIO in there, or I should say the actual name, rather we put in what it does, so that if that name changes later on, it's still applicable. I point out for the benefit of the committee that they are actually under the Department of Natural Resources, so including that may be duplicative, but minimally it was something that showed legislative intent that the PSIO were the ones who are now charged with developing, I should say, overseeing the pipeline systems in the state of Alaska. The administrative order and PSIO is online on the governor's webpage, and it was provided to the previous committee. The term standard practices of the industry, this was in the original bill, has been replaced with good oil field practice. And you'll see that on line 24. That term is one that is a recognized term in the industry. It was, and I'm sorry, I should mention, all of these amendments were approved by the departments. And in fact, a couple of cases were requested by the departments, the affected agencies. The Senate Resource Committee also deleted former subsection B, so you now only see two. There's subsection A and subsection B. Those show up on lines 24 and lines 27. Senator Wagner will speak to that deletion. Section 2 of the bill is the applicability. It goes back to the date of March 31, 2006. Remember, the PPT legislation was retroactive. This ties back to those dates. Section 3 are transitional provisions that the Department of Revenue requested. These are technical in nature. There's no substantive issues involved with them. They're ones that need to be done to match the transitional provisions of the PPT legislation. Section 4 is a retroactivity date. This makes this a tax bill. This makes this April 1st, so that, again, it coincides with the PPT legislation that was adopted. Section 5 is just the immediate effective date for the bill. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before the Finance Committee on this bill. First, it may come as a shock, but I object to Senate Resources version because of the deletion of the former Section B. That section dealt with costs incurred to maintain the operation, a capability of facilities or equipment shut down because of a lack or improper maintenance of property or equipment. This section was deleted by an amendment in Senate Resources by a vote of 5 yeas, 2 nays. As a partial commentary on this deletion, I note for this committee's information that the argument employed that the deletion of this subsection in Senate Resources was similar to an argument offered during the discussion before Senate Special Committee on Natural Gas last August. The argument then was presented by Senator Ben Stevens. I find that connection to be at least curious in the sight of the ongoing investigation of PPT. I was not a supporter of the NET system. I worked very hard to keep the NET system at a higher level than it came in at. I did finally vote for the NET system, but I preferred a gross system at all times. And I still, at this time, prefer a gross system. And I think we're starting to see some of the reasons why a gross system is less controversial. I resigned myself to the NET system and made numerous attempts to amend that system. Those attempts were successful, except for one instance, and that was done at this table, and that's why we're here at this table now. The one amendment that failed is the bill before you today. It failed by a vote of 5 yeas, 7 nays. Obviously, had it not failed, we wouldn't be here discussing it today. More importantly, all those concerns now connected with the bill, the retroactive implementation, the lack of standards or regulations of the Department of Revenue, which would have followed the passage of the amendment, all those concerns would be non-existent. But they are existent in how to implement this provision to put a tourniquet on the potential revenue bleed from deductions is at issue. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Do we have any initial questions for Senator Wagner? Senator Huggins.
Just a comment. The amendment that Senator Wagner is referring to was brought to me by Mr. John Norman, who I think most people that have dealt with this issue for an extended period of time is aware of, and he pointed out the advantages and disadvantages of what it represented, and it was a policy call, and I went on a conversation from him. It didn't emerge from my mind, and I it's a policy call for the state, whether or not you want to have an incentive for to keep a facility operating when it could be dangerous. And Mr. Norman made the analogy of an airplane that needed maintenance, yet it continued to fly. That was a simple rationale that he gave to me and his concerns about it as a professional in Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Could you, Senator Huggins, just identify then John Norman you're speaking of in his
He's on the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Thank you.
And he was the last person that testified on the bill.
Any other?
May I answer that, Mr.
Chairman? Yes, go ahead, Senator.
That's exactly correct. The part that isn't there is the fact that Kevin Banks from Resources was online and did not have an opportunity to speak to the amendment. John Iverson, although more remote than either John Norman or Kevin Banks, was online, did not have an opportunity to speak to the amendment. These are the two people that will be writing or involved in writing the regulations that would be brought about by this bill. And so I thought it was important that they have the opportunity also when you have amendments to this bill. They should have been called upon. I didn't know they were online even. And that's probably a mistake on my part. I should have asked, and I should have asked them to be there because they did not agree with John Norman's summary on the bill. And let's face it, John Norman, through the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, he's a brilliant man and everything else, but his responsibility stops the wellhead. DNR and revenues responsibility go from the wellhead to when it put in the ship down to the West Coast. And that's the difference.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Any other initial questions for Senator Wagner on the bill? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Finance Committee. Appreciate the time.
Let's go to the off-net, Ms. Judy Brady. Judy Brady, if you can identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Judy Brady, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We're a trade association. Our 16 members account for the majority of oil and gas exploration, development, production, transportation, refining, and marketing activities in the state. The amendment to the bill today amends petroleum production tax, which is the subject of a lot of discussion last year, and it's a discussion of a lot of controversy and I think sadness for everybody right now. I appreciate very much the fact that you are going to your stated objective is to hold the bill. I think that for more hearings. I think that the one thing that all of us need to avoid right now is a reaction that ends in a bad bill. Senator Wagner is certainly right that last year this amendment was discussed in the Senate Special Committee on Natural Gas Development, and it was discussed after the BP leak in Flow Station 2 and the oil transit line. The discussion revolved around the same kinds of issues that all of the agencies brought up when this bill was introduced this time. What does improperly maintained mean? What does diminished capacity mean? Who decides in the first place, an auditor? How do commissioners without specialized expertise make this finding? Does there have to be an incident like a spill? If so, that's already taken care of. And when the bill was brought, so they voted it down because they believed at that time that the concerns were already covered by, they went through the other pieces of the act that the concerns of improper maintenance were already taken care of. We continue to believe that today. Pedro Van Muers, who was the oil and gas consultant to the administration, suggested as an alternative to trying to look at every single incident of capital expenditure, a three cent deduction that would act as a proxy for decisions on every single capital expenditure. Incidents or expenditures related to actual leaks or incidents are already taken care of. You cannot deduct those. So what you're talking about here in this bill is having an auditor have to make a decision on every single capital expenditure, or every time there is a shutdown, taking a look to see if that was related to improper maintenance. And that simply is not done anywhere. It's not done anywhere in the world. It's not done between operators on a field. All of the main concerns that legislators had are already incorporated in the Act. Leased expenditures would not include costs arising from fraud, willful misconduct, or gross negligence. Leased expenditures, costs incurred for containment, control, cleanup, or removal in connection with any unpermitted release of oil or hazardous substance would not be included in the leased expenditures. There seems to be a conversation here going on in the background that legislators at the time were not paying attention to what happened at Prudhoe Bay, were not concerned that the state's interests were being protected. Not only were the state's interests being protected by the legislators at the time, the Governor Murkowski at the time and the director of DEC put a 120-hour notification of fund access to the response account for $8 million for a study for the Department of Law, and DEC to take a look at the state's interest in the spill. That study is still ongoing. We found out about it just recently when we realized that the $50 million response fund in the 470 fund was open again for the 1 cent a barrel money from Prudhoe Bay. Let me read you what the state is looking at right now. This is an ongoing study going on right now. I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that perhaps the people from law and DEC could come in and talk about where they are. The purpose of this was to investigate the maintenance corrosion management practices and to recover all state costs and lost revenues, including fines and penalties. And they asked for the $8 million because they talked about the amount of work that was going to be required to go through all of the investigations, to hire engineer companies, to do all of the things that were going to be required for them. And they said the state has incurred costs for response, oversight, mitigation, assessment, repair, replacement of corroded pipelines. Moreover, the state incurred substantial losses in revenue from royalties, severance tax, and corporate income tax from the loss of crude oil production as a result. So, there, if anybody is implying or believes that legislators and people in DEC and people in the Department of Law last year were not paying attention to the state's interests, they're wrong with respect. Because the state was taking all the actions you would expect the state to take to make sure that its interests were covered. The reason that this amendment last year was voted down was because there was a good showing that, in fact, all of the concerns that were expressed in this amendment were already taken care of, and as a matter of fact, the language in the amendment was unworkable. When this bill was introduced again this year, both DEC, DNR, and AOGCC all wrote letters saying that the language was not workable. Some changes have been made now to try to move it in a direction that it is workable, but you've still got a couple of issues. One is that no incident has to be, there is no incident that kicks off an investigation or kicks off a red flag to the auditor. It's going to have to be every capital expense. That's going to be a huge issue. The other thing I'm hoping that you will have time to do is have someone from Department of Revenue talk to you who is familiar with the audit process, someone who knows the audit process. It's at least a three-year process. Commissioner John Norman, when he was talking earlier about how difficult this was going to be to implement, was saying if an auditor red flags the cost, and they're going to have to look at every one of them, it's going to be 3 years before you know, before the company knows what costs are approved and what costs aren't approved. And by that time, the likelihood is you're going to be in either court or in some kind of administrative action, and we are going to be in exactly the same situation that we were with the gross production tax, because it was not thought out at the very beginning, and we ended up with billions of dollars in tax revenues in dispute. Once that happened, neither the companies nor the state could make a move to resolve the issues because everybody was afraid of influencing or losing money on both sides. So I think there was a commitment made when PPP passed that this not happen again, that the regulations would be clear, that there would be a process that worked for everybody because everybody was concerned about the process, that we would not get into this backed up billion-dollar tax unbreakable dead end again. It makes for terrible relationships between the state and the companies, and it influences everything that happens because it's right there, like this black cloud in the background. We have expressed some other legal concerns with this, and I will, with your permission, not take your time now. I will send you a copy of our testimony. The main points are these. We believe the state is already protected. We believe that this bill is going to affect Cook Inlet as well as it will affect the whole state. It will affect every capital expenditure. It adds a convoluted process that has not happened in any other taxing jurisdiction, as far as we know, in the world. The two things I would hope you would do is talk to the Department of Law and DEC about how their investigation is going and what, you know, to make sure that you are comfortable that the state's interests are covered. To go over again the first 18 exclusions in the bill to reconfirm to yourself that you believe that the state's interests are protected. And to have a discussion of the audit process so you can see what's going to happen just automatically with this kind of hang-up